When is enough enough? By Steve and Annette Economides.
We need to ask the question, when is enough enough? But before that, I have a quiz for you. So I do need you to stand up. This is participatory, because this is a homeschool group. We don't just do worksheets. Okay, so here's the thing. I'm going to flash a slogan on the screen. I'm giving you a little time to digest this one. This one should be a gimme. When you know the name, you're going to shout it out. When I put the answer up, if you got it right, you cheer like you would when you win a prize, and you go, woo, kind of like doing a wave, okay? Okay, now, if you get it wrong, you have to kind of sit down, all right? And we're going to see who's standing at the end, and there is a prize, okay? So here we go. Just do it. Woo! Oops, here we go. Yep, okay, you guys got that one. Did anybody sit down? No. Good. Okay. Here's the next one. Have it your way.
Ooh, very good.
Woo! Okay. Okay, good. Some of you who are gluten-free didn't get that one. I know. Okay, here we go. We try harder. Avis. Avis. Oh, woo! We still have some standing. Okay, eat more chicken. Chick-fil-A. Yay. Okay, good. We still got some standing. You guys are doing good. We got victorious people out here. Can you hear me now? Verizon, very good. Okay. I didn't hear the woo.
There were a few of them.
Okay. It's getting weaker. What gives you wings? Red Bull. Those are those who just got out of college. Yes. Okay. Good. Okay. The ultimate driving machine. BMW, yes.
Oh, and, oh still a few standing.
We have a few. You guys are good. Like a rock? We had to bring in the American-made car maker. Okay, good. Woo! Okay, wow. We are down to about six, and it's a...
There's still some standing. Okay. This is awesome.
Okay, this is a trick one. Making the most of your money in your life. Oh, that's good. Money smart families. Okay. Oh, boy. You guys are good. You guys are really good. Hey, you know, it is great to win. Have you ever stood on the victory platform as a champion? As a champion. That is so awesome. Your parents are so proud. Tomorrow, you're going to go home, and you are going to sigh a sigh of contentment. There's a lot ahead of you. But you have achieved something that very few people do. All of us have experienced that it goes from victory to contentment when you've accomplished something, when you've achieved the pinnacle, when you've received the reward, there's peace and contentment. And that feeling is where what we're going to talk about today and how we live there. But you know, there are forces at work in the world that want to rob us of that feeling of contentment. We just went through the ads. You realize that every day, now I spent 23 years in the advertising industry. That was my major in college. My job was to help sell products. And to help sell products, I needed to create that need and that awareness in the consumer so that they desired that product. We kind of had the idea that you didn't know what you needed, so we needed to tell you. Every day, you are bombarded by 2,000 to 3,000 advertising messages. And you may say, look, we don't have a TV. And I go, you're still bombarded. Do you have a smartphone? Do you drive around? Do you see billboards? Do you see clothing with tags on the back or slogans on the front? Advertising is all around us. The purpose, to teach us and show us what we need to have, what we can't live without. Do you know when we do a TV show or a radio interview, the TV show that's an hour long, how much of that is content and how much of it is advertising? Do you know how many minutes is advertising in an hour of TV? About 22 minutes. We do radio programs where we'll do an hour interview and we'll get, I think we get 45 minutes. It's a little less advertising on radio. But it's all around us. You know, you may TiVo things, but look, the world is full of advertising. The purpose of advertising is to create a discontentment in us so that we buy products. It's okay. I mean, the companies need to make money, but if we're aware of it, will be better served. So when is enough enough? When can we unplug? When can we stop buying? When can we stop consuming? What I want to do is I want to take you to meet a king. Now, most kings, you think of rulers and accumulated wealth and gold crowns and scepters and storehouses full of gold. I wouldn't say that the average king would be known as content with what he has. There's lands to conquer. There are things to do. There's money to collect. But I want to introduce you to a king who knew when enough was enough. Oops, hold on. Let me go back. This king lived about 4,000 years ago. He was a real king. Many scholars say it was Solomon writing under a pseudonym. It comes out of Proverbs 30. His name was Agur, or A-G-U-R. I don't know how you pronounce it. I would have called him Sire, just because I didn't want to mispronounce his name. But he wrote a prayer. And if you think of it in terms of a king, or at least a very wealthy individual, it is strange. And here's how it goes. O Lord, keep deception and lies far from me. Now, as a guy, I know I can get sucked into a lot of lies and deceptions because pursuing riches and things like that, that's easy. But keep deception and lies far from me. So he knew his heart could be deceived. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Why would a king pray that? Feed me with the food that's my portion. That I not be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord, or be in want and steal and profane your name? A king who says, feed me with the food that's my portion, realizes his submission to God and that God has a better plan for him than he could ever make for himself. But there's so many more things wrapped up in that prayer, and that's what we want to unwind and look at for us as homeschool families, for us as moms and dads, as daughters and sons. How can we come to the point where we could pray that prayer? Lord, give me the food that's my portion. And that begs the question, Lord, what is my portion? Because I want to live exactly where you want me. Because I know in your presence is fullness of joy and peace. That contentment that passes all understanding. That's where we want to go. So we're going to look at four areas of life and ask the question, how would a king manage his time? How would a king manage his possessions? How would a king look at his children and manage and teach them? And most importantly for guys, how would a king look at his work? And how would he balance his work with his family?
Okay, so how a king manages his time. We are all about practical. And so we want to talk about some nitty-gritty practical things, because if it's one thing the homeschool family needs today, it's more time.
Mm-hmm.
As your homeschool, there's never enough hours in the day to get everything done that you want to get done. But a king, a wise king, knows he has limits and surrounds himself with wise advisors. That's what you're doing when you're here. You're learning, you're gaining wisdom by being at the Chia Convention. You're refreshing yourself every year. That's so awesome. Okay, so we need to establish priorities for our time. We need to look at how we're spending the time during our day, and we need to look at our marriage, our kids and their activities, our home, keeping up with our home, our work, our friends or extended family, and our health. And if we're not balancing all of those things, then something could suffer. So how do we get practical? Well, in our household, one of the things we do to help keep our time priorities is we have a weekly staff meeting. Just like businesses have a weekly staff meeting, our family has a weekly staff meeting. Now, for us, it's Sunday. Sunday is family day. We have church in the morning. Nobody works that day. There's no activities that day. We spend the day together reconnecting. And so we have a staff meeting that night. And when the kids were real little, the two littlest ones would run off and watch an appropriate video that we would put on for them. because that was a treat, and the older kids would grab their date books, and we would sit and talk about all the activities on the calendar for the week. Well, the little ones didn't last very long in the other room. They were begging to come into the other room where we were because they wanted to be part of everything. And our little daughter, Abby, who's now 20 and getting married, you know, she's the youngest of five. She taught herself to tie her own shoes, taught herself to potty train. She just saw so many people using the bathroom, she just figured it out. You know how that goes. And so I swear that girl could be the president of the United States. But that's another story. Anyway. So it wasn't long before the youngest ones wanted to be in the room with all of the older ones doing the staff meeting. And it was a wonderful way for us to just talk through all the activities for the week. At one point, we had five drivers and two cars, and so we were working out the schedules for that. If there were any special events on the calendar, either for individuals or for us as a family, that was the time to discuss them. We never had last minute, oh, I've got a birthday party I want to go to. It taught our kids to plan out in advance. Not only us, but our kids. They were thinking from a very young age, at least a week or two in advance for things. There was very little last minute, oh gosh. And then, of course, during the week, when you get phone calls from people and they're saying, hey, can you help out with this or can you do this? It was such a relief to be able to say, you know what? I can't give you an answer about that right now. I can't even give you an answer about that tomorrow. But I'm writing it down, and we'll discuss it at our family staff meeting.
Isn't that a great out?
And I'll give you an answer on Monday morning. And you know what? Most people were okay with that. Most of the time, it wasn't an urgent situation. And they were like, family staff meeting? Sure. Okay.
And, you know, there were times when we'd bring up something like, so-and-so has asked us to help them move. And the kids would have input on that. Well, you know, I've got a baseball game that day, or we just did that. We're really tired. Could we not do that
this time?
It brought up a discussion as a family and helped us build our team and unity, and it gave them a voice, and that was really empowering to them.
You know, I would venture to say, in a room this full, there are bound to be some pastor families out there, and I would also guess that as a pastor family, you would rather have somebody in your congregation that says yes to one thing and does it really well, as opposed to a person that says yes to just about everything and you just never know what's going to happen. So it's okay to say no to things. It's okay to just look at your time, look at your kids, look at your priorities, and figure out what you want to do. And you know what? We use those old-fashioned paper date books, but it really doesn't matter what you use. You can use digital devices. You can use a calendar on the wall. But make sure you're using something to keep track of life. Because as our families are so busy, it is so easy to lose track of what each other is doing. One time, Steve and I had a little couple of days alone up in the mountains, and People Magazine called. And our daughter, Becky, picked up the phone, and she's like, are you the oldest daughter that has like $20,000 in the savings account? This is the lady. And my daughter's like, yeah. And she's like, well, where are your parents? She says, they'll be back on Friday. So even our daughter knew where we were and what our schedule was because of those weekly staff meetings. And she could help write things down and jot things down. The other thing I want to say about time, as I was thinking through this today, I just felt led to talk about this. You know, we're seeing more and more homeschool families that are two income. And, you know, I am not speaking... obviously, that they wouldn't be two income, but I'm not going to talk to the people that are single parents, that are single moms or single dads. You're doing everything. And I'm not talking really to the person that has a certain set of skills and really wants to use those skills, because that's certainly your choice. The person I'm talking to right now is the homeschool mom that really deep down in her heart wants to be devoting herself solely to her family and her school, but yet feels this pull or this tug to be earning money, to be making money. And, you know, if that's where you are today, we are a living testimony that that doesn't need to happen. That you can survive and you can thrive on one income. And that doesn't mean you'll have a lot, but what that means is what you do have, and that's what all of our resources are all about this weekend. We can show you how to do that, no matter where you are.
The more I get to know the heart of God, the more I realize that in all work, in all labor, there is blessing. And that He is the one who gives us the ability to make wealth. In other words, He moved Israel through the desert to the Promised Land, but the Promised Land could have been desert, but He chose to put a blessing on that land to make it produce. He can choose to take your labor and make it produce. As long as we're willing to say, Lord, we'll live with the portion you provide. He is the provider. We are not. And
yes.
As long as we keep that in mind, I firmly believe that God will take care of our needs. It doesn't mean we're lazy, but it does mean we look to Him as the source.
You know, I get so, so very tired of the culture that we live in today, saying that a woman that wants to devote herself to the home or her children is a wasted life. Mm-hmm. Don't you get tired of that? Because it's not. When people look at my to-do list, they do not believe it. So there are seasons in life. Like we showed earlier, we are now grandparents. We're in a different season. We are not homeschooling anymore. And you know what? I'm just as busy. Is that not crazy? I am just as busy as I was before. But I can choose very intentionally what I want to pick and choose to be involved with. So, you know, when you're in the thick of homeschooling, you think, gosh, this will never end. And I am telling you, it ends.
Faster
than you think. You cannot believe it. Mm-hmm. You know when you're so tired and you have your first three kids and you're just like, I am getting no sleep whatsoever. And people tell you, just wait, because you may be tired now, but wait till they're teenagers. Then you're mentally out. I mean, you're just gone.
Are they home yet? No, they aren't home yet. Oh, crap.
Well, I am telling you, it is a season of life. And there are many seasons of life. Enjoy this season. You know, be submerged in it. Give it all you've got. Because it will end at some point in time. And you want to look back and not have regrets. You want to look back and not have regrets. Okay. So invest your time. Like when our kids were growing up as homeschool kids, we chose a lot of other families that had kids our kids' ages to do social things with. Because that's what worked. And we had one friend that were not homeschooling their kids, and they had different values as they were raising their kids. And they were dear friends of ours when we were all young married, but we chose not to spend time with them as our kids were growing up. And you know what's really cool? Now that our kids are grown, we've reconnected with them. And we're still good friends. So it's okay to look at, you know, who you're involved with. It may mean stepping back from family a little bit. And it's okay to pick and choose where you're going to spend your time, because that's an important thing. We also have tried to eat meals together. Now, I'm Italian and Steve is Greek. Okay?
Oregano, olive oil.
Yeah, oregano, olive oil, and garlic. No problem at our house.
Chocolate chip cookies.
Okay, but that's another thing I think that is falling by the wayside. People are not having meals together. And even if it can't be dinner, for example, if you're we knew one pastor's family where dad was out every night at meetings, so they didn't have dinner together every night, but they made sure they had breakfast, a nice big breakfast every morning. We knew a single mom that had teenage daughters. Well, they couldn't have dinner together every night, but they had a tradition of tea at 10. So, you know, if you are not connecting as a family, make that a commitment this year, that you're going to spend more time doing that. Even if it means we've got a crock pot set up with, for example, sloppy joes or barbecue chicken, and whoever's running in and out gets to access that crock pot from 4 o'clock on. Okay? But make sure you're connecting. Okay, also pick activities or roles. We were always involved in the clubs that our kids were involved in. But rather than picking an ongoing role, like treasurer, that had reports.
No offense, Scott.
Yeah.
No offense.
No. Okay. We picked a project or an event role. So no surprise to you all, but we would say, hey, look, we'll do the garage sale fundraiser for summer camp. Can you see us doing that? Yes. And so that was our role in the scout troop, and it met a really neat and genuine need, and so we were able to be involved with what fit with our time priorities.
So remember, we're asking, when is enough enough, and how would a king manage his time? In our world today, whenever we speak in other places, we always say, you know, the choices we have to make, it's kind of like going to Disneyland. You know, there's so many things to see. And we have to remember not to confuse activity with achievement. We don't want to be so busy that we miss the best for what's good. John Wooden, the famous UCLA basketball coach, this is in our notes, you know, we got to say it, said that. He said, don't confuse activity with achievement. He was sharp. He was smart. He didn't want his guys wasting their energy around the court doing things that were unnecessary. He wanted them to think carefully about strategic moves that would benefit the team. There are always going to be emergencies in life. There are always going to be things that come up. Our schedule is not inviolable, but it is set, and it's flexible. When Annette's parents at different times have been in the hospital, the schedule gets set aside, but we know we can do that, and we're there for our family. If you're organized, if you are on top of it, if you have your weekly staff meeting, if you're consistent with that, very little will get forgotten, and you'll accomplish things you want to accomplish. So a wise king surrounds himself with good counsel, sets time to manage that schedule, and manages it well with the help of his counselors. So how about possessions? Oh, this is a tough area. Because, you know, there are stages in life where you're just starting out and you're in the accumulation stage. And then you enter the stage of maintenance because all the stuff you accumulated is breaking. And then you get to the stage where we are, when the kids are leaving the house and we're going, holy cow.
No, we say, what do you want?
Take it, please.
What can you take? We've got that dresser and that bed in the garage. You're more than welcome to have that.
So when will we ever have enough? You know, there's a saying, I think Dr. Dobson said this, but I don't know who's officially noted with the quote, but he said, we buy stuff we don't need with money we don't have to impress people we don't even like. I mean, come on. It is so hard to be disassociated from the culture that says you need to have the latest techno gadget, you need to drive the nicest car, you need to wear these clothes, you need to go to these places, you need to eat at this restaurant. And this came to just the forefront of my mind as we took a vacation to California for our 15th anniversary. And we went to this place, Hearst Castle. Yep, William Randolph Hearst. He has two swimming pools on the property. There were three built. Do you know the story about that? He built one outdoors. He didn't like where it was, so he had it torn out and put in this one here, this Greek-looking one. I kind of like the Greek-looking one. There's one indoors. There's one outdoors. There's a movie theater. That was before, you know, people had movie theaters in their houses. There's a story about William Randolph Hearst. Oh, wait, I got to show you his dining room. He could have 120 of his closest friends for dinner. That is amazing. Tapestries. I mean, artwork. It is a museum. As a matter of fact, it is a huge museum, and the Hearst Corporation looked at it after he died and realized that it was too expensive to maintain. He built this huge thing, and so they donated it to the state of California, keeping the land, allowing the state of California to pay the upkeep costs. But there's a story about Hearst. Remember, we're talking about possessions. And at one point in his life, he looked at his art collection, and he was made aware of a piece of art that he didn't own, that he wanted. So he tasked an assistant with the job of tracking down that piece of art. Now, it was a little harder then. He didn't have Google. And so he had to go to the library and research and call museums and all this stuff. And this man went on a 3 or 6 month search around the world for this piece of artwork and came back empty-handed. and disappointed. And of course, Hurst was not very thrilled with that idea. He said, I need that. I want you to find it. Keep looking. Well, the guy realized that Hurst had a fortune and decided to go into the warehouse and look through the records there. And he found it in Hurst's collection. And, you know, I know it's funny to think about that. I've done that myself. It's usually with toilet flappers. You know, I go to Home Depot to buy one and realize I already have three. You know? But that's easy to do if we don't have ways to manage what we have. Now, I want to show you another person's house. Recognize this house? I'll give you a hint. We were in Omaha, Nebraska in March speaking at a convention there, and this house was very close by. He's called the Oracle of Omaha, Warren Buffett. He bought the house in 1955, 1958, 6,000 square feet. He is one of the wealthiest individuals in the world. His salary, annual salary, is about $100,000 a year. I've read a couple of biographies. They say he would be satisfied with an easy chair, a good book, and a 60-watt light bulb. Is he content? He's smart. When he was a child, I think it was in North Carolina, he used to go to the beach with a cart full of Pepsi products and go on the beach and sell them to people. He was always in business. He was working. He doesn't give his kids money. He teaches them to work and gives them a job. We had a producer in our home from
Today Show.
Today Show, Megan Reedy. And Annette, at one point in that interview, said, I am the Warren Buffett of groceries. And you know, Megan laughed and all that stuff. And then after we're done with the interview, Megan says, well, I took Warren Buffett out to lunch. And I offered to pay with the NBC card. And he said, no, I'd rather you didn't do that. Let me take you out to lunch. This gives you an insight on the man, okay? And Megan's thinking, wow, he's going to take me to some fancy place. I mean, this guy is worth billions of dollars. Can't wait to see what he does. So he drives and pulls into a Wendy's. Well, he owns Wendy's.
He likes Wendy's.
Isn't that just, he is transparent, though. He's consistent. He knows when enough is enough. He doesn't need to surround himself with all this stuff, even though he could. I believe that we are, in America, afflicted with the disease of accumulitis. I'll give you an example. A paperclip. We were running a young adults group at our church, and we heard about this competition called the Bigger or Better Competition. You send out groups, and we were doing this to gather items to sell at a garage sale for a missions trip that people in the church were going to. So we sent out two groups with one paperclip each. And their job was to go knock on doors in a particular neighborhood and say, I have a paperclip. Would you trade me something bigger or better than a paperclip?
At one point, they had a bottle of champagne to trade.
Okay. And so they just kept trading up.
It was unbelievable what they got to trade.
Now remember, they started with two groups, two paperclips, about 3 hours. Okay, this is what they finished with. And not everybody's here, but we ended up with an exercise bike, an exercise bench, a TV, a computer monitor, a tennis racket, a fountain, a chair, an ironing board, a wireless Netgear router, Call of Duty, a wireless keyboard, a lamp, and I think that was it. Two paper clips. This is all stuff people had that they didn't want. Did you know that storage units in the U.S. in 1960, there were zero? Today, there are over 45,000 storage unit locations with multiple units within them. There's enough for everyone in the U.S. to have 5.5 square feet of storage space.
And this is one of the ways you can free up money instantly. It's called get rid of your storage unit. And I venture to say that there's a good number of people in here, according to the statistics, that have storage units. So you're probably paying somewhere from $75 to $200 a month on a storage unit. So it's time to clean out your house. Even if you've got to move that storage unit stuff onto your back patio, don't be paying that.
Now, let's just do the math. Let's say you have $3,000 worth of stuff in that storage unit. And you pay $200 a month. In a year, that's $2,400. You see, I'm just doing the math. I'm not condemning anybody, but just evaluate the cost. We've helped a lot of people get rid of their storage units and move things out and get rid of things. So here's the practical if you're affected with accumulitis.
Obviously, minimize your media as much as possible. And homeschool families are really good at this. Be grateful for what you have. Start a thankful list. When you sit down together for dinner, put a book, put a little journal together, and once a week ask your kids something they're thankful for that week. It could be something that happened at one of their extracurricular activities. It could be something within the family. It could be something with their relationships. But start a thankful list, because life is hard. Let's face it, life is hard. Sometimes life can even be tragic and difficult. And remembering to be thankful about something small is such a good thing. It's like a breath of fresh air coming in. Think about what you really need. Sometimes a lack of money is an indicator that means something needs to change. So perhaps you need to wait and be patient and pray and consider what your options are. Seek counsel for what your options are.
We have a rule in our house. A rule. This is our lifestyle. Well, we've decided, feed me with the food that's your portion. If I have a need and I don't have the money for it, God, I need a car. Our car in 2005 was wrecked in an accident where somebody turned left in front of us. I've got some money saved. We have insurance, but the insurance company's only given me 6 days of rental car. Lord, I need a car.
No, it was a three-car accident. Everybody walked away. Ours was the only one with insurance.
Now, I could have decided, okay, I need to move this quickly. They're only giving me $10,000 for replacement for our car. I'm going to have to go borrow some money because I can't find what I need here. Or I prayed, I waited, and within 3 days, God led me to Palm Springs, California from Arizona, because I figured I would drive 8 hours maximum to find a car, to a hotel that desperately wanted to get rid of an 8-passenger full-size van, which is about the size of the one we had, and it was costing them $5,000 a year to keep, and they sold it to me for $8,000 with 20,000 miles on it. You see, I have a choice. I can solve the problem myself, look at my need and say, okay, I've got to run to the bank, or I can say, Lord, I have a need. I'm running to you. You are the source. You are the giver. You are the provider. I will not borrow. I will only come to you. And he provided. And remember, the insurance company gave me actually $10,600. The van cost $800, and they put new tires on it.
$8,000.
And they put new tires on it. God loves to give. He loves to provide. He is the source. If we have a need, let's run to him. Let's not run to the bank. We don't need to make them richer.
A wish list is another thing for you and your kids. This is something you should be teaching your kids. Your kids should be running wish lists all year long. You can call it a Christmas list, but our kids know that their wish lists are turned in every summer because that's when I start Christmas shopping. And they get updated like before birthdays, and they know most of the time they have to wait, but just about everything on their wish list is going to get to them sooner or later. However, there was one year that my oldest daughter said, look, Mom, this has been on my wish list for 3 years. If I don't get it this year, I'm buying it. I said, don't worry, you're going to get it this year.
This is funny. These are actual wish lists we wrote. That small one is from May of 1982. That was the year we were married. And we just had things on there, like we had a 1976 Chevy Nova. We wanted to get it reupholstered. That's crossed off. We did it. Cost us $150. Frying pans, clocks, chandeliers.
Everything.
And, wait, where's my blue shoes?
On the next one.
Oh, I wanted, I wanted blue shoes. Penny loaf. That was dumb. You notice that's not ever crossed off. Hey. You know what's cool? You know what's cool is when you put things on a list, sometimes God, in his infinite wisdom, uses a 2x4 to say, you don't really want that, dummy. And you don't buy it, so you don't waste the money. If I had just decided I wanted it and gone to the store and bought it on impulse, I would have wasted his money.
Very few things are emergency situations. Very few things in life. Most of the time you can sit on it for a little while and think and puzzle through and get wisdom about what you should do for your situation. Okay, establish a maximum lifestyle. How much of a house do you need? Really, how much? And once again, I know homeschool families are better at this than the average person, but we had one of our website members write in and say, look, I got rid of the big house. And I have a small house now. I can clean it in just a couple of hours all by myself. It's wonderful. My husband and I are sleeping at night. We're not worrying how to pay bills, utilities, etc. So how much house do you really need? And I know homeschool families, if you're bigger, a larger house is nice. But we're looking at our house. We only have one child left at home out of five. And we're thinking, well, thank heavens mom and dad are going to be moving in soon. But at some point, we've got to make an exit plan to get out of there. Because it was great when the kids were little, but now it's a little bit too much house. So make a plan. How much car do you need? Once again, I know homeschool families, buses are preferred. But, you know, but at some point you won't need that bus. So think through what the plan is for that.
Well, the question is, if God blessed you, would you say, I'm going from a minivan to a Jaguar, a Mercedes? You know, is that where God wants us to be? And, you know, actually, for some of us, that is where he wants us to be. Mm-hmm. That is the portion he's called us to. And there is no condemnation. There is no shame in that. But that's where we've got to be seeking him. And I had to wrestle with this because I was working in the advertising industry, and all these people at this company were driving fancy cars. And I'm driving my 1984 Honda Accord.
But before that, when he first got launched into his account exec position,
this is so funny.
The one company he was working for had company cars.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was given a Porsche to drive. And I thought, this is absolutely ludicrous.
I'm earning $20,000 a year driving a Porsche.
We don't even make in a year what this car costs.
The house we were living in, our neighbor was a custodian at a local school. So Wayne comes over, leans on the car and goes, new car?
And we're like, no, we don't own it. And then the second one the boss gave him was a BMW.
535i.
And we were like, this? We're like, this is ludicrous.
It was worth more than our house. Yeah, the sad thing is, the company went bankrupt. No wonder, okay? No wonder. I did lose my job when the IRS came in and locked my boss in his office until he agreed he should be setting aside payroll taxes. Okay, and then the next day I was laid off. I took 3 days off, found another job, God provided. My clients followed me, and God is the provider. I lost the car, though. But God provided two cars in 1 year for cash, and double my salary.
Year. The next
so
year.
So God is good. He's the provider.
So live simpler if you can. Look at what you've got and simplify that, because everything you own has to be maintained. It's not just owning something, it's maintaining it. Do you have the time to maintain everything that you own? If you don't, then guess what? It owns you.
Don't ever buy a swing set. You ever read the instructions? Once a week, check all the screws. You know, I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. That's why we have kids. They can check them. A king's contentment comes when he is grateful for what he has and he's okay with his portion. It's okay. What does Proverbs say? It's better to live in the corner of a house than with a contentious woman. But I'm not looking at the contentious woman. I'm looking at, it's better to live in a small place where there's peace. It's okay. You know, in the 50s and the 40s, there were 3 and 4 kids to a bedroom. I grew up in one of those.
And one bathroom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's okay.
I don't know how
we can wait. Okay. All right.
If you're a boy, you go use the tree in the backyard.
A king keeps his children a priority. If not, they will end up taking over the kingdom or wasting his wealth. Hey, kids are a target market for marketers. James McNeil is a retired professor at Texas A&M University. They call him the godfather to child marketing. He identified that children spend their own money, which their parents give them, to the tune of $29 billion a year. That's only between ages of 4 and 12. They influence the spending of their parents by about $290 billion. That comes out to about, if you break it down to a certain number of families in the U.S., about $538 per child per month. Now, I don't know that that's true. I just know that it is true to some degree, that our kids influence our spending.
So what do our children really want? Do they really need the latest, greatest electronic gizmo or computer or digital?
I think they need that Mac too. That was great. That was, oh, I love that.
We knew a family who had children, and they signed their daughter up for everything. I mean everything. Sports, clubs. By 10 years old, that daughter was anorexic. Okay, she's since gotten therapy, and she's overcome that, and she's... But we need to be careful. We need to be careful that we're not living our dream through our kids. That we're looking at our kids as each and every one of them are different. And each and every one of them have awesome gifts and talents. And we need to help them be the best that they can be. Forget our dreams. Forget what we wanted to be. This is not about us. This is about our kids. And helping our kids figure out where they're going to shine the brightest. Limit the activities. It's okay to limit the activities. When our kids were little, each one was allowed an outside activity, but we stuck to things that met once a week. And I'm not knocking any pastors here or churches, but we actually avoided some of the church activities because I'm not going to name it, but there was one particular church activity that a lot of people were involved in, but it spanned over the dinner hour. And I wasn't willing to sacrifice our dinner hour. So I just said, no, we're not going to participate in that. Now, God might call you to something different, but the main thing is to look at your overall big schedule and figure out what's going to be best for your kids and your family. We don't give our kids cars at 16. You know, they drive the family car.
Yep. Well, we did hear about one family. They weren't a homeschool family, but this guy was really smart. If Google the words, how my 12 kids all paid for college themselves. This guy was an engineer, and he didn't give his kids money, but he did give them each a car when they were 16. He had it delivered by tow truck to the driveway. He handed them a shop manual and said, you provide the work, I'll buy the parts. That is smart.
Not one of his kids wrecked their car.
The first car he gave to his oldest daughter was a 1965 Mustang. Ooh, the pride of the school when she fixed it up. But there are many ways to do it, but we don't believe that giving our children things develops any great character or strength in them. Helping them learn how to get them helps them develop their own physical and mental muscles to achieve their goals. And I don't want to steal the accomplishment of saving for a car, finding a way to buy a car from our kids. That is an amazing accomplishment for someone who's under the age of 20 to reach.
There's one more thing I want to share. And I don't know if this is prevalent in California, but I'm going to share it anyway because it's prevalent in Arizona. The homeschool movement has been shifting. You know, when we first started, okay, I did calculus in college, and I didn't like it because I couldn't get an A. Even though I worked for hours at it, the most I could get was a C. And I liked A's, so I dropped it. Okay? I never touched physics. But you know what? It didn't matter. When we started out homeschooling, we said, you know what? I don't know how to do this stuff, but I'm going to try to learn right along with my kids. And when they get to be teenagers, I'll find a resource for help. Okay?
And Dad knew the math that we didn't know, so he'd come over and help teach it, and we'd learn alongside.
But there's a shift today. And I'm not saying that co-ops are not good. But in Arizona, some people call themselves homeschoolers when they are car schoolers. They go from co-op to co-op to co-op, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, every day of the week. Okay, Dorothy and Raymond Moore, I saw them up there. We met them. We brought them to Arizona for our very first homeschool conference. They would be like, what is going on? They wrote some excellent books that hardly anybody is selling them. Better late than early. School can wait. If you can get a hold of any of their books through Amazon or Half, I highly recommend them. They were pioneers of the whole homeschool movement. They believed that family spending time together, what was it? It was academics, it was work, and it was service. Those three things. And hardly anybody has time for the service part anymore because they're so busy with their activities. So I'm all for co-ops when your kids are older and they're in moderation. But when your kids are little, there's so many great hands-on things you can do with them at home. Do them. Yes, it takes time for you to do them and to invest, but it is, you will never regret your investment in your kids. Never. Never, never, never.
Wow.
So let's get practical. What do our kids really need? A wise king is going to look and say, God, show me what they need. They need to know how to love. That came out weird. How to love learning. They used to come. They knew I was a pushover. You know, Dad, how do you spell this? Oh, you just do it like this. You know, and eventually I had to learn. No, because Annette would never do that. She'd go look it up. Here's the dictionary. You know, I wasn't so smart.
I give them like the first two or three letters to help them if they were really stuck. But they found it. They eventually found it.
So teaching our kids the resources to search out the answer on their own helps them develop their own strength. Needing to learn to love to learn.
Wait, you know what? I got to throw something in here real quick. It's a homeschool tidbit. In the, what we did for school, because it's 115 degrees in Arizona, so you can't go out and play in July. It just doesn't happen. You can go to the pool, but that's about it.
You can fry eggs on the sidewalk.
Okay, so what we would do for our homeschool, and like I said, I don't know what your laws are, but in Arizona, we were able to do this. We would school from mid-January through mid-November. And our summer break was through the holidays, because that's when it was craziest for me. And I had those kids busy every day, catching up on chores that we didn't get done during the school year. From not only addressing Christmas cards and baking and wrapping presents, to cleaning out magazine racks in the bathroom, okay? But the other thing we did in the summertime, and I'm not seeing this in any of the curriculum halls anymore, is we played educational games every Friday. There's a company out there called Aristoplay. They have games for everything. Geography, science.
Hail to the chief. It's the political
system. Made for trade. And the kids were learning somebody about all the body parts and what they do.
Eureka.
And
about
so
the gold
we
rush.
Played these games. Are there any old homeschoolers in here that know what I'm talking about?
You mean more mature homeschoolers?
Can you raise your hand? There's a few of us. We played games every Friday. They thought it was game day. It wasn't really game day.
She came up with a game where she lined up all the stuffed animals, and they played omnivore, carnivore, herbivore.
and we put the stuffed animals in piles. So you see, there's so many more ways to learn than just with books. So if you have a kid that's struggling to read, forget it. Just wait a couple of years. Play games. It's much more fun,
read
and your
books.
Kids will learn a ton of stuff. And read books. Read, read, read. Have a story time every day.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry. I'm sorry. That was a terrible bunny trail.
They liked it. All right. So what do kids need? We got to teach them to love to learn. We need to teach them to work. There is nothing great about leisure. I mean, leisure is a good thing, but it seems like our culture, the focus is, how much can I relax? How little can I work? That's not what God's created us to do. We need to teach them we are not raising children. We are raising adults. We are raising adults who will stand independent from their parents because the umbilical cord was cut at birth. The financial cord needs to be removed before they're 18 because they need to stand on their own. We are raising future adults. We need to teach them to love. And, boy, I'll tell you, we're going to cover this in a few minutes, but I didn't know how to do that. And if you're a dad who is hurting, you need to get the tape, the CD from yesterday where we talked about Reflections of a Homeschool Dad. Because if our hearts aren't soft and if we aren't being transformed by the Lord and having our past dealt with, we are going to raise children who don't know how to love. And that is serious, because that's our responsibility. And we need to tell them they're valuable. We didn't want to hurt our daughters, because everybody would tell them they were so cute, and we wanted to be careful to balance, to not let them go to that place where, you know, they thought that beauty on the outside was everything. And this is to our disgrace. A few months ago, our daughter, who's 29, said, "Mom and Dad, you know, you didn't tell us very often that we were pretty." How do you build them up without building vanity? And we need to love our kids. I mean, I spent time hugging our daughters and loving them, but verbally, I didn't know how to do that. And that's an area I've got to go back now, but God is allowing us to repair that.
And we're going to talk a lot more about that today in our Raising Real Kids for the Real World.
So a content king knows that their kids don't need more stuff. They need more time. Ross Campbell wrote a book, How to Really Love Your Child. And he talked about their emotional tank. And I realized at one point with our daughters that they would let me know when their tank was full. And I'd just hold them. They'd stay on my lap until they were done. And they'd let me know. That's where we need to be with our kids. You can spend time with them now, or you will be forced to spend time on them later. And we don't want to do that.
I mean, we do, but we don't. We want to do it in a good way.
A wise king keeps work in perspective. A contented king will know how to balance ruling his kingdom with recreating with his family, because he realizes his kids will be gone in the blink of an eye. When our son John, who's now 31 years old, was first born, Annette's grandfather was 93 years old, and he came to Arizona. He was living there at the time. And I'm holding John like a football. His head's here, his arm's here, and I'm standing in the living room of our apartment, and Poppy looks at me. He only had one eye, and he goes, "Remember what you're feeling now. You'll never experience this again." Wow. I told that to my son John just a few weeks ago. But I forgot that. Because, you know, as life gets busier, as you have more kids, we adopted two and had a baby born in 4 months, period. Life got really, really crazy. I was working. My job started changing. I ended up with more clients. From 1989 to 2000, I was working for the largest graphic design firm in Phoenix. And I was dealing with clients from Motorola. They were my biggest client. Rental Service Corporation, which just merged with United Rentals. St. Joseph's Hospital. Intel Corporation. I mean, these were big companies. There were a lot of demands. And I got sucked into the world of being self-important and loving my job. And I thought my job was to bring home a bigger and bigger paycheck. We started buying out services, like having laundry done and having a cleaning service come in. And I thought that's what Annette needed. You know what? That was wrong. We could afford it. Our house was paid off. We had money in the bank, and we could afford it. But I didn't realize the emotional toll that all of the work would have on her. And I didn't undergird her and support her. And it came to an apex one afternoon when I was in the middle of a photo shoot for Rental Service Corporation, working on a big quote for a Motorola project, biggest quote I'd ever worked on for them. And the phone rings. I pick up my cell phone, and she says, "I need your help."
I was at a park day, a homeschool group monthly park day, where there were classes for the moms and organized, structured, I think Athletes in Action provided the activities for the kids.
Yeah. She said, "I need your help." Well, I'd heard that before, so I started to tune it out because I figured it was some trivial thing. That's a wrong attitude. "I need your help. John took his bicycle and jumped a berm." A berm is a little hill of dirt, you know, for irrigating a field. "And he fell down, and I think he broke his collarbone." Now, being the sensitive, loving husband that knew, had his life and priorities in line, I said, "Sure, I'll drop everything and be right there. Where do you need me to go?" I wish I had. What I said was, "Isn't there someone else who can take him to the hospital?" Yeah. Do you know what that did to her spirit? Do you know how she felt? I can say it now because I understand those feelings now. Then I didn't know what a feeling was, because I wasn't taught to feel. I was raised by a dad who was one of four boys and didn't know how to be loved. His parents didn't love him. He didn't love my mom. We didn't talk about that stuff. But what she felt then was abandoned, crushed, unimportant, devalued, like a bother. And that's not what I ever want her to feel. But I did it that day. And that was the start of the unraveling of my self-centeredness. But God had to take me through a lot more painful stuff to get my heart to the point where it was soft enough to be molded by Him. There is hope. I was a Christian. I accepted the Lord at 18. I asked Him to tear down strongholds. But there were issues in my life that I hadn't dealt with. So guys, if your wife is coming to you saying, you're hurting me, you're saying things that are wounding me, I'm not comfortable with something, we've got to hear that, we've got to honor that, and we've got to be strong enough to say, I need to deal with some issues. There is a book that ripped my heart out, and it's written by Milan and Kay Yurkovich. It's called How We Love, and it helps unravel some of the issues that you may be carrying with you from your youth. And even the best parents with the best intentions, with the best walk with the Lord, may not protect you or guide you through everything. There's a story of I think she was 6 months or a year old, a girl who was left beside the road after a terrible car accident when both of her parents were taken off to the hospital.
She was only left for about an hour, but there was such chaos. And so she grew up with issues, not really understanding
fear of abandonment.
Everything that happened.
She was clingy to her husband to the point where he was concerned about her mental well-being. But all kinds of stories where they take you back to your childhood and say, do you remember a time as a child when you received comfort after an emotional breakdown? And when I read that, I went, I remember one time. One time, and it was my grandmother who issued the comfort. And it helped me realize that if I was not able to find a place of comfort and peace in the midst of turmoil for myself, how could I ever lead my family there? And so, guys, I'm calling you to realize that we need to put work in perspective. We need to get our hearts in perspective. Because we are called to be the leaders of our family and not leaders in, this is the way we're going to walk. But in leaders of their spirits, leaders of their hearts. We use the word spiritual leader, but that is so trite. And what I want to say is we are responsible for taking their hearts, their gentle, tender hearts, and like a shepherd, guiding them, just the way Psalm 23 talks about, to the still waters, to the peaceful places. And if we don't know how to guide our own spirits, we can never lead them. And that's where we've got to be. I realized my work was more important than my family. I realize now that life, if I would have called my clients and said, I've got a son with a broken collarbone, I need to go to the hospital, they would have totally understood. But in my insecurity, I couldn't do that, and I didn't. But that sent me on a journey of learning to simplify my life. And this isn't what everyone's called to. Not every man is called to running their own business. But God took me through a process of working 20 miles away from home, spending, 250 hours per year driving to and from work, to working a mile from home, to then working in the home. And for the last 11 years, now Abby was 9 years old, our youngest was 9 years old when I came home, and our kids said, Dad, don't go get a job. Even when money was tight, we took a huge cut in pay. But because we didn't have any debt, because we had a system for managing our money, and because we realized God is the ultimate provider, we've made it these 11 years. And in that 11 years' time, on about a third of what we used to earn, we've paid off our house. God has provided cars. We've managed the money, and He's given us the platform to speak to more than 25 million people around the world through media and different speaking events and writing books. So God provides, and my work is not my most important calling.
So the practical, a few quick practical things for what you can do so that work does not encompass your family. Lower your overhead, get out of debt, consider a smaller home, Consider one income to simplify, and just look at what else you can purge from your house as far as your possessions.
Just, I want to talk about the slides up here, just one of them. Yahoo, homepage. Psalm 127 is what comes to mind when I see that. It's vain for you to rise early, to go to bed late, to eat the bread of painful labor, for God gives to His beloved even in their sleep. One morning I woke up, working at home, check my email, hit send and receive, and money starts coming in. People are buying subscriptions to our newsletter. I'm going, wow, this is wild. Annette, come here and take a look at this. Click. Emails come in with money. And we're talking maybe $1,000, but I'd never seen that happen before. And what had happened was overnight, our story from Good Morning America had been put on the homepage of Yahoo, and people started coming to our website in droves. I think there were like 11 or 12,000 people that came in one day. God gives to His beloved even in their sleep. He is the provider. And that just crystallized in my mind that I'm just the hands. God is the one who does the work. I need to ask Him to bless His work and use my hands, not bless my work. My work is nothing. So let's take it back home. What's our portion? Who's the provider? Can we open our hands and say, God, give me the food that's my portion. I won't run to the bank. I'm only going to run to You. You are the provider. My job is to love my wife and kids. My work is what You called me to do. And I'm content with that. How will you know when enough is enough? With your time, when your spouse and your kids have their emotional tanks filled, when you've spent enough time with them, they'll let you know. When you're with your possessions, when your budget balances, and you have peace at home, when you're not always obsessed with, oh, what's the next thing we need to get? With your kids, when they give you a hug and they say, thanks, Dad, that's enough. I'm done hugging you. You know, at Abby's wedding, we're going to play Butterfly Kisses because that was one of her favorite thing. That's our dance, and I know I'm going to cry, but I spent the most time with her because I finally started learning what kids needed emotionally. And work, when your family is truly more important than your work, when you can leave it alone. So let's forget about the advertisers who want us to buy their stuff. Let's forget about accumulating more, allow God to meet that need, and remember King Agar. So we can live like a wise king who knows when enough is enough. You guys are going to be blessed by the rest of the things that are going on at this convention. God is going to lead you. And I just want to pray before we go, because I know this is a big area. Father God, we look to You as the provider. We know You are our daddy. We know You are the one who loves to give and bless and grow and teach. And we ask You to prepare these families for the most important calling, and that of being a mom and a dad, of loving their kids like You love them. I pray You heal the hurts and the wounds in the hearts, that You give them inner strength and courage to face what's wrong in the past and to allow You to be the surgeon to bring healing to their hearts. I pray that You would bless these children, that they would grow in the fear and admonition of the Lord, and the love, know that they are so loved by You and by their parents, and that You would help meet the needs as they arise of these families, because there are many, Lord, but You are the ultimate provider, and we ask You to bless them, protect them, guide them, and give them what's good and right. In Jesus' name, amen.